My name is Eduardo Esparza. I am the founder and CEO of Blue Dot Project and the host of the Climate Levers podcast. In this podcast, we go deep into the stories of entrepreneurs and changemakers who play a critical role in valuing and supporting the Earth's natural capital. Here we acknowledge that nature provides critical services to modern society like water, regulating our climate, and making land inhabitable. But we take nature's services for granted, depleting it faster than the Earth can naturally regenerate. So if the current system values nature more dead than alive, then we need to change the system. We need economic models, businesses, and policies that properly value our planet's natural capital. In this podcast, we talk with entrepreneurs and heroes changing the system from within. We go deep into their personal stories, inspirations, and unique approaches. Together, we unravel what it truly takes to shift the system into one that secures a brighter, more abundant, and sustainable future that supports all life on Earth. Now let's meet today's host and their guest. In today's episode, we have Augusto Andrade, an industrial engineer, business consultant, and Nima Daradi, data scientist and technologist. They're now co-founders, CEO and CTPO of SCOG, a company that scales and democratizes carbon credits related to forests and agriculture. They work with farmers, universities, and agro associations across Brazil, making them aware that they can make money by preserving the forest and improving their agricultural practices instead of cutting the forest. Welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about your journey. How do you get started? How did you end up here?
I'm from Brazil. My dad is a farmer, also an agriculture engineer. Both my mom and dad followed to study engineering and started a career in consulting and travel and moved around quite a bit. But then I took a break after 15 years to do a program for startups. I just really wanted to be involved in startups and innovation. I knew that innovation was really happening with startups. Then I met Nima and his love and his passion for nature, and it all came together. And Nima's story inspired me a lot, so maybe he can tell how he got involved with that.
I'm originally a caged animal, so I come from Tehran and from this metropole of concrete. My passion for plants came from the fact that I didn't have the fortune of growing up with too much of nature, as I also see in Norway, many people are kind of brought up with. I developed this fascination about plants. My selfish part was the curiosity. So then comes the impact. At some point, I decided that we should use our resources into making a change. I really tried to come up with an idea I can show to the investors that is viable economically. And my best shot was to look at urban trees and how they impact the price of properties. And when I pitched about this, Augusto just took me aside and said, "Hey, dude, you can use this in the carbon market." And I wasn't aware of that. So he came up with this innovative ideas to combine these impacts and grow a business that's sustainable. And this has been really our motto from the start. We can grow an economy and GDP at the same time that we preserve the nature. So this was how we met and connected and bonded. And immediately with the synergy that we had, we came up with a lot of different ideas and narrowed down till we're here.
What is this solution that we have come up with? What does it do?
SCOG means forest in Norwegian, but it spells with one O. We put a double O both because we want that infinite loop, but also so foreigners can pronounce it a little bit more like it sounds in Norwegian. In terms of vision, it values forests. As Nima said, he always say this thing that trees are very data friendly because they don't move. In theory, they're quite easy to count from the sky. So it's about valuing forests. And the first application, which is carbon, the reality is the way we explore forests is not very intelligent, and we didn't have technology to do better. Our idea is to work with private landowners, especially in Brazil. Every time we hear about deforestation in Brazil, you see the president face and how bad this administration has been for the environment, and I don't disagree with that. But half of Brazil is privately owned. So a lot of people own forest land, and the only notion of progress is cut it down to plant. Lately, it's been soy. A lot of cattle. I think cattle is the main driver. Our idea is to try to value that. How much carbon would that emit if you deforest or if you reforest an area? Gives access for landowners to carbon markets, so they think of another way to use the land, a way that they will get a financial return, but without deforesting or using land the way they use now for agriculture in not very clever ways.
You said the carbon markets and carbon financing is the first step, but what is the long-term play for Skoog?
To be able to understand how much carbon an area can sequester or can hold, you need to understand what trees are in that area. If you know what trees are in that area, you can think of better ways to explore those trees in a sustainable way. For example, if you have a hectare of land in Brazil where there's a lot of açaí, which is a fruit from the Amazon, it's worth far more than any other. Just to think only of money, it's just worth a lot more. And that's because açaí has become mainstream. The same technology we're going to develop to count and classify trees. In the future, hopefully, we're going to be used to understanding the value of each tree and then explore it sustainably.
How do you go about getting the data onto the platform that you need to assess?
We're going to get data from several different sources, like public records. We need to mix that data with some sort of carbon mapping. We need to understand how much carbon is in different parts. Brazil is quite a large country, and it has 6 biomes. Each one of those biomes have different carbon density, and they all face different risks of deforestation. So the idea is to combine data from different sources. Almost like you're narrowing down. In the beginning, you can use a lot of satellite and more wide type of carbon maps. When you get closer to actually developing a project, then you need more granular data, which will come from manual measurements, whatever is the cheapest way we can use and quickest to get the data that we need in the level of competence that we need to develop the projects.
The next question is about the multidisciplinary models. I read that Skoog has this ability to run for different financial models, the financial gains. What does that mean, and how does that benefit the landowner?
It's quite funny, actually. I was in Brazil. I was in my farm, and I was asking my dad, like, oh, why do you raise cattle? He's like, oh, you know, it's tradition. It comes from your grandfather and probably a great-grandfather before that. And I asked him, would it be more beneficial if you plant eucalyptus? There's a lot of eucalyptus in the region. Actually, Nestle has a large area. They reforested there. I asked him if it was financially more beneficial. He didn't know. People don't have this idea of, you know, how their land could really be worth if they use it for different purposes. So the idea is that we have a model where farmers join and we show them how much their land could be worth in different sustainable scenarios. We know, as a matter of fact, for many scenarios, it would be more beneficial to change the way they do things, depending on the carbon density. It's like ESG for farming, if you think about it, it's more sustainable and more profitable.
Yeah, you know, because we deal with the entire process of issuing carbon credits, also verification and selling from supply to demand side, we deal with many different data sets. So two important tasks that we have, one is to measure biomass and the other one is to estimate the risk. And they all use a variety of different data sets from the category of remote sensing. That's the typical thing that pretty much all the tech companies in this area do, is using airborne and terrestrial LiDAR data. So that's relatively accurate to estimate the biomass, but we also want to do the shortcut and use the view of the trees from above, and use allometric equations also in order to estimate the biomass. But that's just a portion of the work. The type of data jobs that is more controversial when it comes to carbon markets is estimating risk and the quantify metrics that are involved, like additionality, leakage, baseline. These are different metrics that can assess if a project does the real work.
We see a lot of tech companies getting into carbon markets, also some more traditional companies developing carbon projects. We kind of try to combine those two worlds. We think to really drive the change, you need to have a team on the ground. So far, it's just me going around the different parts of Brazil. I went to the Amazon. I went to another zone in the southeast. There's a different biome called savanna. And in the transition from there to the Atlantic rainforest, talking to people, testing those models, I said, on the ground, testing those assumptions and validating the model. It was very much confirmed what I suspected, that when you talk about carbon credits to them, it's this abstract entity that will come and change things that they never heard about, even though this market has been going on for 25 years. Those companies are creating the technologies, and we are going to be one of them, pushing the technologies, pushing the boundaries to be able to measure things more effectively. We want to have people on the ground telling people they have to use land differently, even for their own benefit, for their financial gains. But that's more like the carrot. We really want to explain that what they're doing is damaging. And I managed to convince a few, and they're very, very hard to convince because they've been doing the same things in the same way. But when I come in and I show them even the most basic technology, I just show them on satellite the area that they cleared out over time, and then I might zoom out and I show how the whole thing looked like 25 years ago, and they get shocked. They're looking at their own land, they forgot about the environment, and they can see the impact. Oh yeah, there was a river there that is running very low, or it's dried out. They feel the impact, but they never really zoomed out. When I was there, I talked to cattle ranching associations, cooperatives, universities. I felt like no one was pulling them together to drive this change on the ground.
Well, in systems thinking, we call that bounded rationality. And people just take decisions based on what they think is best at the moment. But the moment you expand the vision a little bit, it drives behavior. So talk to me a little bit about what is the process to get carbon financing in just the regular process market, and then how SKUG is changing that.
What companies do, they scout an area. They find an area where there's a high deforestation rate. A lot of them acquire the land, and then they develop the project, they certify, and then they sell the credits. There's also companies buying and selling. The thing about buying the land felt wrong to us, because it's almost like, oh, we found a clever way to get more money out of that land. Let's buy it and take whoever's living there out of that. We think it should be more democratized, right? If you find a way for landowners to make more money out of their property and do good for the environment, then you should tell them not just buy their land, right? So that's kind of how it works today. There are different types of companies. Some of them develop the project. Some of them do sort of the measurements. Some of them do the certification, the validations. We kind of want to do the whole thing because we want to connect the buyers and sellers, mostly so there's more money left to the landowners. We talked to some of them in Colombia, and we know how much carbon is worth today, and they're getting like a fifth of it. The more there is left to the landowners, the more we can compete with things like cattle or soy.
Yeah, regarding the pricing of carbon, is the same as anything else, is the supply and demand in a free market. And something that Augusto made me understand in the early days that we met each other was that this market is undersupplied. There's a lot of demand for all these different types of carbon credits. We see that different carbon indices have different pricings. I actually don't know what exactly defines this price, so we want to figure this out. Regarding the process, also I want to bring cryptocurrencies as an example. 10, 15 years ago, you could not really imagine that you can make a currency and go around and sell this currency and establish that this is actually something that we can trade with. So we do want to register and we do want to certify as much as we can. But if we do deliver real impact, if there's a forest that is being cut down and you can stop it and someone pays you to do that, we think we might be able to facilitate that payment and that agreement between the seller and the buyer. Regarding the change, how are we going to make the change? You need to identify and calculate the agent of deforestation. So whatever that pays them to cut down and plant soy or cattle or palm trees elsewhere in the world, you need to be able to match that, but also reduce the initial cost. Because something that we realized was that the initial cost of just defining and certifying a project is too high. That makes it just impossible to approach the long tail of this market. I think that the breakdown that we found was like around, was it 1,000 hectares? Currently, below that is not worth for them to sell their carbon, and we can reduce it to 50.
I understand that from the process that you described, the biggest bottleneck seems to be getting this idea in the minds of people that they can do something different than what they had in mind. So this diffusion of this knowledge is the primary bottleneck.
I can tell you what they told me on the ground, right?
Yeah.
They told me once someone here in the region starts to get paid, things are going to spread. That's a bad metaphor, but spread like fire, right? That's also the reason we believe on the boots on the ground thing, because one of our flagship projects might be with the leader of the cattle association. If he goes swimming against the tide and he stands in front of this group of people who their purpose in life is to raise cattle and say, look, I'm going to actually use my land differently. And that can change things because he's going to become a change agent. And that's what we believe in.
Yeah, there's a lot written about the diffusion of innovations, and it follows exactly that pattern, right? When you have a change agent, but that change agent needs to fit certain characteristics, and it's not everybody. It's people who are more open, maybe the ones who are a little bit more resource-rich with more education, likely to be more open to this, and then it spreads from there.
And you're right, yeah, the first ones might have to be someone with a higher ability to influence, because I work with business transformation for 15 years, and you come in and try to tell them to do things different and change their processes, change the systems, and we will have to have people everywhere, essentially.
How long does it take from the moment you identify an opportunity to the moment that they actually get the car from financing?
Once you have the technology in place, first we have to build several components. The human factors are the only inertia, I would say.
But, I mean, today takes a long time. That's what our research shows, right?
2 years. It's certainly maybe a quarter, you know, like much shorter.
I think from the time they find the land and develop the project, get it certified, we surely want to accelerate. It doesn't feel like we have that much time to wait.
Well, there's a lot of deforested land for growing cattle. Brazilian steaks are very popular around the world. What can be done with land that is already being used for cattle? What can they do to minimize impact?
Yeah, well, we begin what we call silver pasture, right? Which is a mix of forest and pasture. There are things like rotational grazing, which people like my father, who is educated and he's an agriculture engineer, he does it. But it's essentially taking a longer term view. It's almost like sustainability for farming, as I said, because my dad has both the academic and the tactical knowledge. Let's say he has a big area and he divided into different areas, and then he never lets the grass go below a certain point. He could have increased the number of cows in that area, which means they would eat more, and then the grass is going to get lower, and then when it rains it sort of washes away the soil. That's what you don't want. So he rotates them. People try to push that to the limit. If you implement, for example, those agroforestry systems where you mix forest with grass, you're going to have branches falling, leaves falling, and that becomes organic matter. That's why we like an arbor that does an infinite loop things. Just
regenerate. Yeah.
Regenerate, yeah. But then they need an incentive because it's not easy to implement some of this stuff. I was talking to this guy, I told you, who's the president of this cattle association. He tried himself and it failed because you need the right combination of grass and trees. Topography matters, the space in between the trees matters. And the way he did it, I think he got too much shade on the pasture. But when it works, it really works. It's almost like a synergetic system where the trees grow better than the wood without the grass, and the grass grows better than the wood without the tree. The funny thing is it gets more productive. So the cattle grows faster, essentially. So it's really a win-win, but you need knowledge, and that's the part that is hard to scale.
Even when people clear cut, if they just leave that last 2%, the cow still has as much grass to eat, is well fed, and is fatter and happier. This modern mindset of go and conquer and just clear cut and optimize and extract the maximum value. That's what we've done. Like we humans, we extract everything out of nature, and it's actually not productive. It's just, you know, give that little extra couple of percent and we all bring it back, and then so much magic happens in that area. And we do it with design. When I was trying to make trees profitable the past 4 years, and I heard this, I got this idea from many people that first you have to manifest the change that you want to make. So it was a lot of talks about AR and VR. And trees are not difficult object to visually augment. So when we can actually sort of manifest an area, okay, this is your empty land. This is what it's going to look like if you plant this kind of species. And these are the choice of the right species. And this is how it's going to look like in 3 years, 5 years. And so when people see it, then they pay for it, right? Much easier. So we are also looking into those elements.
If a landowner goes through the whole motion and gets the carbon finance. What does he do now? Like, he received the money, then what? What other models or lines of activity that he could engage in now that he has this carbon financing?
Yeah, so that's a good question, because people have the impression that, oh, you're going to be paid to do nothing, right? Actually, they have been doing a service for free. Because in Brazil, you have an area you have to preserve. If you have land in the Amazon, you can only clear 20%. You have to keep 80, which means you have 80% of forest in your property that you have to manage. You have to have a fence around it. You have to monitor if there's some sort of fire. You need to go there and solve it. So they're going to just continue to preserve the forest, but they're going to be paid for it. We are going to be looking at two levels, right? One is the farm level. When you zoom out, we're looking at areas where we can close those corridors. So you have a reserve here, and you reserve that, and you have all those farms in between. And sometimes you see them from the top, and there's like very few areas left. But if you can preserve that and then create that chain, that people are like, you know what, how the biodiversity have been locked into parks, big plots of land in between, and then what they're going to do is just what they've been doing, farming, but in a different way, and preserving, but in a different way, with a more collective thinking. There's also the social co-benefits of it. We're thinking about doing things like agroforestry schools in the region, so it really will be a change. You can think of it as the entire new ecosystem, with more companies doing forest measurement, reforestation, studying biodiversity, implementing those systems where they are more sustainable. So we also think it's going to be a cooler job for the next generations. They're less inclined to do farming today, but they're less inclined to do farming today the way it's done. People are becoming sort of stars and YouTubers. Carbon is one part of the wildlife economy. There's things like non-timber forestry products, so they'll be gathers. And I have an example again from Brazil where there's this guy who came up with the ice cream shop with 100 flavors you never heard of, because he has the local communities gathering fruits in the forest, and then he turns them into ice cream. You have things like ecotourism. So we just think they're going to do different things with their land. They're going to be more profitable, and they're going to be more happy, and the environment's going to win. There will be lots of things for them to do.
So my last question is, how long until we see this live? What are you in the process of finalizing the platform and getting out there?
Yeah, we're working on the MVP right now, and then they have different timelines, but I think we would be able to ship out the first MVP with design aspect of either avoided deforestation parts, that is, you are told by the software which areas you can preserve and how much money there is and what are your alternatives, and for the other one, probably just a little bit longer time. Yeah, that's our plans.
We don't want to work with something theoretical. Additionality is like number one. We don't want to be creating technology here for 6 months, 1 year without preserving anything. Another reason I went to Brazil is to scout land, and we got some landowners signed up. And we want to develop projects in parallel where we develop the tech, so we have a real case to base on. And then we already generating some conservation or restoration. So we have people already. We have people, we have partners. I visited this guy who reforests 3,000 hectares in the Amazon with a proven method. He can supply seedlings, he can supply people to reforest. So we got to create the tech as we develop the projects. We're going to kind of do both at the same time. So hopefully you're going to see, if you want to follow us on LinkedIn, you're going to see soon, you know.
Let's go to a rapid five. What's your top author or book?
David Graeber, who wrote the book Bullshit Jobs. He basically says that a lot of the office jobs that we have these years are useless jobs, and people who do it, they know that they aren't really delivering a value. I was going to add that worse than that are the destructive jobs. There is no job more important, in my opinion, than conservation right now.
I would say Alpo is Jean-Paul Sartre, which is linked to existentialism. I've been reading him all my life, and I think it changed a bit of the way I think.
What leader do you look up to or inspire you?
I would go for Georges Monbiot. He's an investigator and a journalist and also a public speaker, and I really think that he has been very influential in the cause of conservation to bring radical ideas or ideas that aren't really radical to the mainstream and showing us that these things are so important and if we don't do them, they're radical.
I quite like Jack Welch. I like his old school leadership style.
If you had a magic wand, what will be one thing you will change or a problem you will fix today?
Yeah, you know, I'm very fascinated by networks, and I think every problem that we have is not the individuals that we humans are, but the way that we are connected, the hierarchy, the way this network is functioning. So I would reorganize this network, and that would change everything. That would bring the best ideas out, and it makes us survive in harmony with nature.
I would say, in my case, land use. When we look at the latest IPCC report, I think it's really two big chunks of things that can make a big impact on greenhouse gas. It's energy, and we think there's a lot of money going in that direction for a long time, but I think people are waking up for land use in general, which is agriculture and deforestation.
All right, number four is, who do you think we need to have in the podcast?
I would say bring Extinction Rebellion.
And I would say bring your friends from another startup called Susti. They're doing a really good work with fashion and fast fashion, and that's another very impactful thing that makes a lot of impact in the way that we live.
And number five and last, do you think we'll make it?
Yes. I think we can do it if we do it slow and steady like nature does. I think we have to just live in harmony and calculate it and not give up. And it's a long road. I said 3 months till we ship the product, but it's 3 decades till we actually see a systemic change. So we have to be very, very patient, just like nature. But I think we will make it.
Yeah, I think the same. I think it's a yes. You need to show resilience and put your head down, do the work, and there'll be ups and downs. It's a really roller coaster. Sometimes you wake up like, what am I doing with my life? Sometimes you wake up like, yeah, let's go and change the world. But, you know, there has been things in my life that showed me the value of resilience.
Thank you so much for coming to the show, Augusto, Nima. Pleasure to have you.
Thank you for the invite.
Thank you for the opportunity.